You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus and BearsWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. We are once again helping you pass the time before training camp really gets rolling here. And so today we'll be continuing our early look ahead at the Bears' regular season schedule, moving on to the second divisional opponent of our series, the Minnesota Vikings, who first take on the Chicago Bears in Week 11 before the two teams rematch in Minnesota for Week 17. I'll be joined by Matthew Collar from 1500 ESPN Twin Cities to break down, obviously, the big additions on each side of the ball for the Vikings, but also the changes that they made offensively in the coaching staff with John DeFilippo taking over as offensive coordinator, a guy a lot of Bears fans were looking at as a potential head coaching candidate as the former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback coach. We'll also kind of look at some of their changes on their offensive line, of course, Sheldon Richardson on the defensive line, and we'll wrap up with a bigger picture look at the time frame and the window for success that these Vikings are looking at. Obviously a Super Bowl contender in 2018, but they have a few contracts expiring on the horizon, and we'll touch on how long their potential reign at the top of the NFC North might just last. Joining us now on Locked On Bears is Matthew Collar. He works for 1500 ESPN in the Twin Cities, covering the Minnesota Vikings. You can hear him on the radio there or anywhere in the country on the Purple Podcast, which is a great source for more in-depth Vikings analysis. You can follow him on Twitter at Matthew Collar. That's C-O-L-L-E-R. Matthew, I saw in your Twitter bio, I'm supposed to ask you about adopting a greyhound. What's the story there?
The story there is that my wife and I adopted a greyhound 2 years ago, and it has turned out to be a great decision. I don't know if people are very knowledgeable about greyhounds. They're racing dogs, and there are still some places in the country, Florida, West Virginia, a couple of states, that allow dog racing. And when the dogs are done as racers, then people have to adopt them. They have to find homes for them. And there are more greyhounds than there are homes at the moment. So if anybody is interested, send me a tweet and I will point you in the right direction, because most places, most areas have a group or two that adopts greyhounds and finds homes for them. So here in Minnesota, there's a group that my wife and I help, and it's great. It's been a super rewarding experience, and they are awesome, awesome dogs.
Yeah, my girlfriend's actually been bugging me about fostering dogs, so maybe I'll have to run the greyhound idea past her.
Yes, fostering greyhounds is a great idea because they are the sweetest dogs, but they don't know how to be like regular house dogs, right? Because they've always lived in kennels and been forced to race, so we had to teach ours how to like climb stairs. So you had to do things like putting a hot dog on each stair and get her to figure out which legs go where. And after a little while, she figured it all out, and now she's got her backyard that she runs around, and it's really great. But the people who foster them, they're heroes because they make it very easy for the people who adopt to just take in the dog, and then it already kind of knows what it's supposed to do, where to use the bathroom and things like that. So yes, do that if you have a chance.
Well, I'd love to talk about dogs and greyhounds all day, but let's get into some Viking stuff here. I wanted to get your take on sort of the mentality surrounding this team. I mean, does it feel like this offseason it's Super Bowl or bust this year, or is there some level of, you know, maybe there's going to be some transition here with Kirk Cousins and John DeFilippo, who I want to get to in a minute?
No, I think it's all in. I think it has to be. The expectation is if they don't reach the Super Bowl, then it's a disappointment for this season because of where they ended last year and because of the things they did this offseason, especially with Kirk Cousins. Even though they got a really good year out of Case Keenum, you always felt like there was another shoe that was going to drop eventually with Keenum, and it did in the NFC Championship game against the Philadelphia Eagles. He throws the key pick six, and then the rest is history. And really the reason that they decided to sign Kirk Cousins is because they weren't sure if Keenum could repeat his very good season. They didn't know if Teddy Bridgewater's knee would hold up, and the same goes for Sam Bradford. And they wanted to bring in a quarterback that they felt like if they got behind or the defense wasn't perfect in a playoff game, that he could, you know, have enough talent to bring them back in a game or to, you know, match another team back and forth. And that's why they paid him so much money. And so when you put $84 million guaranteed into your quarterback, have the number one defense, two top 20 wide receivers, and a running back that looks like he could have a very long Pro Bowl career, I mean, yeah, you definitely put that bar all the way up at the Super Bowl. This is the culmination of 4 years of Mike Zimmer since he got here, building this roster up to this point, and this is kind of the peak, the crescendo of this era under Mike Zimmer. So I think they look at this year and I guess maybe the next two at least as this is their time to win, when they have all these great defensive players, a lot of guys under contract, and a team that's stacked and ready to win now. It's just, there are a lot of teams in the NFC when you look up and down that are probably saying the same thing, like, this is our year, and if we don't go to the Super Bowl, then it's a disappointment.
How are you expecting the Vikings offense to look differently this year? I mean, obviously it's going to look different with Kirk Cousins, but, you know, with Pat Shurmur leaving for the New York Giants, John DeFilippo coming over from the Eagles, I thought was a great hire. How do you think it's going to change just the way the offense runs and the way it looks on the field?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a hard one to answer because John DeFilippo has only been an offensive coordinator for 1 year before, and it was with Cleveland, and they didn't have a whole lot of talent. Gary Barnidge was their top wide receiver that year. They had a couple of different quarterbacks mixing in and out. I believe that was a Manziel year. So, I mean, it was kind of a messy one season that he had as an offensive coordinator with a very poor franchise. It's the exact opposite situation here with a proven veteran quarterback and all sorts of weapons up and down. And he really can grab from a lot of different buckets. You know, I mean, with Pat Shurmur, he was one of those West Coast guys that, you know, comes from that long West Coast offense coaching tree and kind of an OG of the West Coast offense. But Shurmur found different ways to mix in all sorts of different concepts too, that it wasn't just a pure, we're only going to do West Coast. And that's kind of how most offensive coordinators are now, or at least the ones that are succeeding. It seems like when you go through what their different concepts they used were, it's just a mixed bag. And I think with this set of weapons, where you have Stephon Diggs in 2016 was a slot receiver, but then last year he was an outside receiver, and it was the reverse for Adam Thielen. 2016 he was outside, then he moves inside last year for more than half the snaps. So I think what he has is a bunch of chess pieces that he could put in all sorts of different positions, and that goes for Delvin Cook too. I mean, even in minicamp, they were having Delvin Cook line up as a wide receiver at times. And I think he has the ability to do that because they did that at Florida State with him from time to time. So that will be really interesting with DeFilippo to see how he uses all these weapons. Will he take a lot of the same concepts that Shurmur used, or will he kind of throw out some that he felt didn't work as well? One of the things that Pat Shurmur loved to do was put in multiple tight ends and run a ton of play action. And that was probably to help out Case Keenum as much as possible. But that's also what Washington did a lot with Kirk Cousins, and he had great numbers when he was running play action. So there's a lot of different things in play for John DeFilippo to balance, and it is going to be one of the top things that we're watching all year to see how he does it.
Well, coming up next on Locked On Bears, we'll talk about how John DeFilippo and the Vikings offense is going to affect Kirk Cousins' production this year. And then, of course, we'll get to the strong Vikings defense and what to expect from them with the addition of Sheldon Richardson. Keep it locked here on Locked On Bears. We're talking Minnesota Vikings here with Matthew Coller of ESPN Twin Cities. Matt, do you get much of an impression on where to expect Kirk Cousins' production? You know, like, you look over his last 3 years with the Redskins, it was relatively, you know, not totally flatline. You know, he had almost 5,000 yards in 2016, but consistently the last 3 years, a 4,000-plus yard receiver. He's up over 65% completion percentage and hovering in that 25 to 30 touchdown range and, you know, 10 to 15 interceptions. Do you get the impression that the added weapons with the Vikings are going to give him a bump up in terms of production, or the fact that he's playing on a better team that's going to have a lead more often and a defense that's going to be able to hold up its end of the bargain more, will he have less opportunity to produce at a higher level?
I think you could see maybe more touchdowns, but it's hard to say how much they'll run in the red zone. You know, I mean, that was a Teddy Bridgewater criticism. He didn't throw enough touchdowns. Like, right, but they handed off to Adrian Peterson every time they got inside the five, so he didn't get fat on touchdowns. But to your question, I think that when you look at the 2016 season, you look at what Washington had on offense, I think that that group of weapons, if you include the offensive line as a weapon, was better than what the Vikings have, or just as good. And I would probably put the bar around there. I mean, as far as yardage goes, it's hard to say, because I know that they're going to want to run Dalvin Cook a lot. And also, if you get up in games and have a top defense, you're more apt to run the ball and try to grind the clock out and things like that. You know, you didn't see Case Keenum throwing for 400 yards every game, but he never had to. And they would get up, their defense would lock the other team down, and then it was, you know, screen passes and running with Latavius Murray and things like that. So that kind of makes it hard to predict where the yards and the touchdowns are going to be. Now, I think this would drive maybe analytics people crazy, but really the only way that Kirk Cousins is going to get graded is by wins. I mean, as much as I love to dig into every stat, what his completion percentage was in the red zone and, you know, third down and longs and all sorts of stuff, I love to know all that stuff, all the Pro Football Focus numbers and everything. But what it's going to come down to is, as far as grading him as a success or failure, he could have, for fantasy owners, a mediocre year and win 12 games, and it was a success. Because that's what they're really looking for with this team, is just for the quarterback to hold up his end of the bargain with this stacked team and get them to where they want to be. So even though I know that that's like an annoying answer to people who don't put much value in quarterback wins, but as far as Cousins go, that's the only thing that's really going to matter.
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of the rare situations where quarterback wins can be an argument. You know, I think people try and use it with quarterbacks on bad teams. When you have a team in this specific situation built for a quarterback to come in and be the difference maker, you know, this is a supporting cast that got Case Keenum to 12 wins. So, the wins that Kirk Cousins gets is therefore his measuring stick compared to how other quarterbacks did in the past. I think that's a fair point there. I want to move to the offensive line here, because I felt like this was a group that obviously was a problem even more in years past and improved some last year, but I thought they still struggled a little bit. And this offseason, I know, you know, resources were limited and they added Brian O'Neill in the second round, but that kind of seemed to be about it for the up front. So is there much reason to expect some further improvement on this offensive line? You know, is Kirk Cousins going to be better in the pocket to prevent sacks, or is Dalvin Cook going to be able to create more to make the offensive line look better, or are you expecting about the same from them?
So this offensive line kind of has, I would say, its ups and downs. It's major positives to how it's built and then some major drawbacks. And the major positive is that it's built really well for a zone running scheme. And that is exactly what Dalvin Cook does best. He has great vision. He's got great burst. And last year when they ran zone, I mean, it was a major challenge for defenses to stop him. And part of that is because they've got some really athletic offensive linemen. Riley Reiff for a tackle is pretty quick. And Pat Elflein showed last year that he could step right in to the NFL and is a great blocker in space. And then Nick Easton, you don't expect the Harvard boy to be a great athlete, but he got into the second level as quick as anybody, and that really helped them on screen passes. I mean, it was big for Case Keenum to have the success that they had on screen passes. And there was a play that I remember specifically against Detroit where Keenum throws a screen pass to Stephon Diggs, and Nick Easton runs from the guard position all the way out to hit the safety and open up the hole for a huge play from Diggs. That's stuff that not that many offensive linemen do, but that's how they wanted to build this. So that's the plus, is that you can, a lot of times, because of these linemen, get a lot out of a little, where Kirk Cousins doesn't have to make a perfect throw into a tight window. Maybe he drops it off to Dalvin Cook and he takes it 30 yards. The down to this offensive line is that Rashad Hill is probably going to end up as the starting right tackle. He was an undrafted guy that they picked up off of Jacksonville's practice squad 2 years ago, and he started in the playoffs and struggled quite a bit. And, you know, he's got his ups and downs for the few games that he's been into, but he's never played a 16-game season. Also, Mike Remmers has never played a 16-game season at guard, and that's probably where he's going to be too. So that right side of the line is pretty questionable. And with Kirk Cousins, if there's a criticism that I would have of his game, it's that he'll hold on to the ball too long a lot of times, and that can cause trouble. I mean, over the last 3 years, he's number one in the league in fumbles, and I think that has a lot to do with how often he'll try to hang in and hang in till the very last second. But if he's doing that with this team, and I don't see either their right or left tackle being toward the top of the league in stopping edge rushers, that could be a little bit problematic for them.
I know one of the big moves, you know, other than Kirk Cousins, the other headliner was Sheldon Richardson joining that defensive line that was already one of the most talented groups in the NFL. How much of a difference can he actually make when you have, you know, Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter really dominating the edge and Linval Joseph in there in the middle? I mean, I'm sure Richardson's an upgrade from Tom Johnson and some of the other guys they had last year, but how much more of an impact can he make on this defensive line?
I think one is that it takes away the one weak link in the running game. Linval Joseph tends to cover up for pretty much any weak links because he's such a monster in there. But, you know, if one thing that Tom Johnson, and he did improve over the years here, but he was never supposed to be an every down three technique, and he kind of ended up being that. And he struggled at times when it came to the run game. I don't see Sheldon Richardson as a guy who's going to have those same sort of problems. And in the pass rush, I think if you got equal sort of production, and I don't mean just sacks, where Tom Johnson was great was he had a lot of pressures, a lot of hurries. He was always good at driving his man back or just getting a little bit of an edge to put that middle pressure on a quarterback. So maybe Everson Griffin ends up with the sack, but Tom Johnson and Linval Joseph did a lot of the damage there up the middle. And that it was one of the dynamics that worked so well for them over the last couple of years. And Tom Johnson was a big part of that and also a leader on the defensive line. He was a guy that they brought in from the CFL at one point and kind of grew into someone that was a go-to guy for them. And that really helped. Sheldon Richardson doesn't come across to me like he's going to be any type of real leader or anything. He's here to get some sacks and then get a big contract next year, which is fine. I don't begrudge anybody for trying to do that, but that's what he's here for. And I think his pass rushing ability is pretty special if he's the same player he was a few years ago. And with the other talents around him, there is an opportunity for him to rack up some sacks and have a big impact. But like you said, I mean, they were the number one defense with Tom Johnson playing there. So, you know, maybe they're a little better, but I don't see it as this massive upgrade. I think more so that Tom Johnson was probably underrated because there was so much other talent around him.
When you look at this number one defense from last year, I mean, where's the weakness, or at least where's the weakest part? You know, the defensive line, it's pretty darn loaded, like we said. The secondary with Xavier Rhodes and Harrison Smith are, you know, phenomenal there. And then Trey Waynes kind of came into his own, and Anderson Dejo, I think, has been an underrated safety. I mean, does that just kind of by default leave the linebackers because they're both, you know, on the younger side and still on their rookie contracts? And I guess throw Ben Gideon in there, but they play nickel so much, you know, I'm thinking more Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, or is there something else here that I'm overlooking?
Well, I think that the biggest shortcoming is just depth. Because if you go position by position, and I would say that the linebackers are in pretty good shape. Anthony Barr had a bounce back season last year after a tough 2016, but I think he was playing with an injury. That's kind of the going theory for 2016 because of the way that he did jump back to his old self last year. And Kendricks is one of the best cover linebackers in the league, I think. I mean, he's undersized, but he's got great quickness and instincts for the game. And so you saw last year they were the best in the league against opposing teams' running backs in the passing game in terms of yards per game allowed. And I think that's kind of a testament to those two guys. So I still look at that as being a strength. And with the safeties, Sendejo had a good year. But Sendejo also had a really severe concussion at the end of the year against New Orleans, tried to come back and play in the NFC Championship game and had to be pulled from the game in the first half. I wonder about his age as he's getting up over 30. And just if you go position by position, who they have behind these great starters, there isn't really much. I mean, they didn't bring in any new edge rushers, so it's just a couple of guys that they've drafted late or undrafted guys with some potential at the linebacker position. You mentioned Ben Gideon. Gideon is a pure run stopper. If he were asked to play 60-70% of the snaps in a game, I think it would be pretty bad for you because teams would just attack him in the passing game. And they drafted a guy, Devontae Downs, but I don't know a whole lot about him. He's a late-round draft pick and whether he could play. And at safety, it's hard to say what they would have there if anyone got injured. The only position you might feel pretty good about the depth is just corner because they drafted Mike Hughes in the first round, because Mackenzie Alexander has come along a little bit from last year. You know, so if you got these guys behind the starters that are pretty solid, and at 40 years old, Terrence Newman can still play. He proved that to us last year. So, you know, but even then, though, I mean, if you're asking Newman to play too much because someone gets hurt, or Alexander to play more than he did last year and you got a rookie. So it's one of those things where last year they had the 11 that started in week one started in the playoff game, which you would never expect for any team to have a healthy, complete lineup from week one start in the playoffs after 16 games. And I just don't know if that's going to happen again, right? I mean, what are the odds that they could stay completely healthy 2 years in a row? And that's where I think they will get tested a bit, is if they have to go to some of these backups that, you know, are not really proven.
Well, we know the Vikings are going to be good in 2018, but up next on Locked On Bears, we'll get into just how long they might be able to sustain their success, especially given some big contracts set to expire here in the next couple off seasons. That's next on Locked On Bears. So looking at the bigger picture here, I mean, obviously the expectation is 11, 12 plus wins and a push to the playoffs. How do you expect the season to feel and, I guess, look differently than it did last year? I mean, besides the obvious, like, you know, there were question marks with Keenum taking over and then he kind of surprised everybody. The narrative last year will be very different than the narrative this year. But in terms of results, is there any reason to expect, you know, it to go out differently? I mean, do you expect like a hot start or a hot finish or potential trouble at any point in the schedule? I mean, I don't need like a game by game win loss total prediction or anything, but how do you expect the season to play out?
I think it's going to be a lot harder than last year. And, you know, not that it was easy to lose your starting quarterback, but it seemed like everything kind of fell into place for them, starting with the Aaron Rodgers injury, which the Vikings certainly played a part in. You know, starting with that, you beat the Packers twice without Aaron Rodgers. Well, this time around, they're going to have Aaron Rodgers. And you beat the Bears twice with Mitch Trubisky making his first starts and John Fox on his way out. Well, this year, they've got a new head coach, and they've got a lot more weapons on offense and still a pretty good defense. You know, I mean, Detroit, they've got a new head coach. And you look at the quarterbacks that they're going to go up against on a week-to-week basis here. I mean, it's a murderer's row. You've got Drew Brees mixed in there. You've got Tom Brady mixed in there. Carson Wentz is going to come back, and you have to go to Philadelphia. You got to go out to L.A. I mean, this is a really, really tough schedule that I think is a lot harder than it was last season. And so even if they go 11-5 or if they go 10-6, they might still be just as good of a team and just as dangerous when it comes to the playoffs, or even more dangerous, but have gone along the way, hit some more bumps in the road. And maybe the defense isn't first. Maybe the defense is 10th, but they're the same guys who played the same way. It's just that Drew Brees beat them or Tom Brady beat them, because that's the NFL and that happens. So I think what they're going to have to do this year, the hardest thing might just be dealing with the adversity that comes along. Last year, after week four, they basically didn't face any type of adversity. And it was just feel good story after feel good story. I started to feel weird myself about writing just like, well, this guy's playing great. This guy's playing great. This guy's playing great. I'm like, is there anything that I can criticize here other than talking about the likelihood that Case Keenum would eventually, you know, turn into a pumpkin? But other than that, it was kind of like, wow, everything is going their way. And having that happen 2 years in a row in the NFL is pretty rare. So I think if they can deal with some of the adversity that comes and beat a couple of these really good quarterbacks, which Mike Zimmer has been known to do, then, you know, there's still going to be one of the best teams in the league. It's just at the end of the day, their record might not be as good.
So to kind of wrap up here, you know, I think we touched on it a little bit at the top, but there's some big contracts set to expire this offseason, and, you know, there's some question of how long can they sustain the success? And I know that's the million-dollar question, but do you get much of an impression on just how much is riding on this season and how big the concerns are that after this year there could be a big drop-off?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a very hard one to answer. I think that Kirk Cousins is the type of quarterback that needs everything to be going his way in order to be one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. That what we saw from him last year is the offensive line falls apart, he loses a couple of wide receivers that he had before, and all of a sudden, instead of being in the top 10, he's not really anywhere close to that. And so I think that's kind of who he is as a quarterback, that there are limitations there. It's not like Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers that's just going to raise the play of everybody around him. And so a lot might depend on, you know, whether Stephon Diggs resigns and if he's going to stay here long term. I tend to think that he will sign a long term contract before we even get to training camp or at the beginning of training camp. But if he doesn't, then we could be looking at him playing his final year with the Vikings and them trying to replace one of the best route runners and best in terms of contested catches and a really special wide receiver. That's very, very hard to do. So if you lose that guy and then, you know, some of these defensive players get older, I think what we see around the league, it happens a lot with defensive players, is that they're good and then all of a sudden they're not once they get to 30 or 32 or whatever it might be. And you just don't know where that cliff is going to be. So Linval Joseph when he gets there, or Everson Griffin when he gets there, maybe Harrison Smith when he gets there. Harrison Smith had a case for defensive MVP last year, and he will probably still be good for another few years, but you never know when that's going to come or when someone's going to have, you know, that injury that slows them down or something like that. So it ends up being a very difficult question to answer, but they do have almost everybody under contract, having signed Danielle Hunter, and if they – you know, bring back Anthony Barr, but I don't think he's a real true key piece to keeping them good for a long period of time. I think the way they look at it is these next 3 years where they have Kirk Cousins for sure under contract, that all 3 years they should go into that season having an argument to be a Super Bowl team. And looking at them right now, I think that's probably fair to say that this window here is probably a couple of years, and then you're going to have some guys get old or some guys leave or something like that. But the fact that they've been able to keep all of these star players under contract and get so much out of guys like Stephon Diggs on their rookie deals and Eric Kendricks on his rookie deal, that says a lot. But eventually, you know, it happens to every team if they don't have that truly elite quarterback. But I guess it's hard to see them completely collapsing after this year. But I would still say that it's all in on this year, right? That everything was built up to be this year. It's not like if they went 8-8 this year, it wouldn't be like, well, you know, that's okay because we're still on the rise or something like that. It would feel like a massive, massive failure if that happened.
Well, Matthew, you're nowhere near a massive, massive failure. You've been an excellent guest
on the
Locked On Bears podcast. I want to remind the listeners, they can find you on 1500 ESPN in the Twin Cities as the Minnesota Vikings beat reporter, and they can hear you anywhere in the country on the Purple podcast. I know you were telling me before you've been bringing in some pretty good guests, and you co-host with who is the lady you co-host with?
Courtney Cronin from ESPN. She covers the Vikings.
Yeah, so I mean, you get two different perspectives there. A female voice, something we don't get enough of in the media at all, and it's just an excellent source for Vikings analysis. And of course, they can follow you on Twitter at Matthew Coller. That's Coller. Matthew, really appreciate you taking out the time to talk Vikings today.
Yeah, sure. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
And of course, everyone should adopt a Greyhound after listening to this.
Yes, they definitely should. Or at least look into it, look into fostering. And I would implore you to do it as well.
Thanks again to Matthew Coller for joining us on the podcast today. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to keep up with the rest of our early regular season schedule previews, Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on whatever listening app you're using right now. It's the best way to make sure you're able to keep up with all of our shows every week. We're bringing you multiple episodes, and especially as training camp gets rolling here, we're going to be pumping them out even more frequently and really get back towards that daily Chicago Bears talk. I know you've been missing. I know you've been craving. And with Chicago Bears football finally back in our lives, so too will the podcast be back in your ears much more regularly. Later this week, we'll be looking ahead to the New York Giants for the Bears Week 13 game, but we'll also be getting you ready for training camp. I know the day this podcast is coming out today, the Bears rookies will be reporting to training camp, and then a few days after that, the veterans will be reporting to training camp, and then the first practice open to the team is next weekend. We're getting there, and I'll have all sorts of preview content ready for you this week. We'll talk about what to watch for and also how to physically visit training camp if you're one of the Bears fans that lives close enough to Bourbonnais, Illinois, and Olivet Nazarene University. I'll give you the tips and tricks on where to go, where to sit, where to go in the town, you know, where to eat, all that good stuff. I've been to training camp a few times in my day, and I've got a few pointers as an experienced training camp attendee, hoping to make it down there at least once or twice this year. And if you're going to be there, feel free to let me know. We can try and meet up and say, hey, tweet me, you know, at CoxSports1. You can let me know if you're coming down. Of course, the show is on Twitter at LockedOnBears, also on Instagram at LockedOnBears, and Facebook.com/LockedOnBears. Plenty of ways you can keep up with everything we're doing here on the show. Going to be bringing you lots and lots of goodies as this training camp goes on, and I hope you'll keep it locked here on the Locked On Bears so we can continue to bear down.